You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 403 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, coming to you live on this fine Sunday. I actually recorded the great majority of this podcast on Friday with Sam Vecini of The Athletic, but it was not terribly time sensitive, so I elected to hold it because we had the podcast on Friday with Michael Cunningham of the AJC. I would definitely recommend going back and listening to that. It's pretty short by our recent standards, but MC has great insight, and it's definitely something that you want to check out because he's plugged in as much or more as anybody around the Atlanta Hawks. Other than that, of course, Sam is fantastic. I would talk about him as arguably the leading draft analyst, or if not the leading, definitely one of the leading draft analysts, somebody that I enjoy quite a bit. So check out his work later on in the podcast. Also subscribe to The Athletic, as he says during that interview. He is behind the paywall, but I do understand people's resistance to that. But for me, it's been very, very worth it to subscribe to The Athletic. They also have some pretty good deals there as well. One, I guess, news-ish item to hit on before we get into the actual meat of the podcast is that the Hawks held a workout on Saturday, a rare one. That's only, I think, the second time the Hawks have actually had a full-blown workout of draft prospects on a Saturday, but they brought in a couple of players on Saturday morning. The headliners for that workout were Cade Bates-Diop of Ohio State and Moritz Wagner of Michigan. I've definitely talked about Wagner quite a bit on the podcast, and actually we talked about him a little bit later with Sam, but he's somebody who probably would only be in the mix for the Hawks at number 34, but still somebody who is draftable. Bates-Diop, I've sort of seen all over the place, honestly, in this run-up to the draft. A veteran guy out of Ohio State, combo forward type. We talked about him on the Combo Forward podcast early on, which I would definitely recommend going back and checking out. But Bates-Diop certainly could be, in theory, in play at 19. I think I'd probably argue that he's better suited some other places other than the Hawks because he's a little bit older, a little bit of a lower ceiling kind of prospect, but definitely has the tools to be sort of a perfect modern combo forward 3-and-D role player type. I do like his work quite a bit, honestly. I wouldn't take him at 19 probably, and he probably lands somewhere in the 20 to 25 range for me. Definitely would be certainly in play if he was somehow available at 30. I don't think that's going to be the case. And if the Hawks want him, they're probably going to have to look at him at number 19 overall, something that I probably wouldn't do, but wouldn't be a terrible pick by any means. So those guys were in the building on Saturday morning. Other than that, the rest of the workout was definitely, you know, summer league kind of guys. Jordan Howard of Central Arkansas, Jack Landale of St. Mary's, Junior Robinson of Mount St. Mary's, and Zach Smith of Texas Tech. That people always ask why the Hawks bring in guys who don't appear to be draftable, and I would always say it's because of summer league considerations, training camp considerations. They want to get a look at guys often. They also want to do some favors for agents. There's always a reason to bring in a guy. There have been a few players that the Hawks have brought in that I would tell you probably have no chance of being NBA players, but you know, the Hawks also operate a G League team, so there's no reason to think that they couldn't bring in some guys who they might find at least tangentially interesting and take a closer look again, because you know, at the very least, they're going to have to fill out two summer league rosters in Utah and Las Vegas. They may not be identical, and they're going to, you know, they've taken as many as like 19, 20 guys to Las Vegas in the past, you know, and only, you know, 7, 8, 9 of those guys are actually going to be, you know, roster consideration. So filling out the roster in summer league with guys is always an important and interesting task. And look at some of these guys that we're talking about as potentials to do that. So without further ado, let me tell you guys to subscribe to the podcast now. Please check us out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, wherever you like to listen to podcasts. I really appreciate everybody who's already done that. Also, every single podcast is hosted on PeachtreeHoops.com, where I am the editor-in-chief. If you're a new listener, that is the SB Nation Atlanta Hawks site. That's where all my Hawks-centric writing goes. And I also can be found sort of on a national NBA scale writing over at DimeMag.com under the UpRocks umbrella. So please check us out. Please subscribe. Leave positive feedback. Tell your friends, and without further ado, here is the great Sam Vecini. Sam, thanks for joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate it. How's everything going in your world?
It's great, man. Mike Bibby is now the most jacked human being in the world. I've finally gotten over my nightmares from seeing Hereditary. It's draft season, so that's always a really busy time of year. It's just a really fun, enjoyable time out here in Los Angeles.
Absolutely. I know you're not busy at all this time of year. You got it. The next week or so, I'm sure it'll be very slow for you. So I really appreciate you taking the time to join me on the pod.
Yeah, I legit went out yesterday and bought like 80 Nespresso pods for the new iced coffee thing that they have, because I have an espresso machine, because I basically function on caffeine most times of the year, but especially this time of the year. And I'm expecting those to be gone by like Friday, next Friday, I would say.
Yeah, it's silly season in a number of ways, but I appreciate it. And obviously the Hawks are pretty interesting this time around, more so than in a long time. I guess we can start with number three, which is the thing that I keep talking about with everybody, but we'll get a little bit deeper with you since you are capable of doing that. But at the number three spot, lots to sort of decipher here. And of course, it sort of matters, obviously, what the Suns and Kings do. But, you know, kind of assuming that DeAndre Ayton's probably going to be gone, the Kings kind of unlock a lot of things. But what's your overall feeling on what could happen at three? I know you're a little bit higher on Marvin Bagley than most people are. I think you mocked him to the Hawks pretty recently. But where are you at with this number three pick sort of in a vacuum right now?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that I would say about the number three pick is that I really like the way that Atlanta is handling it. There have been some rumors that, you know, it could be traded. But for the most part, Travis Schlenk and this front office, that I believe this is their second draft, they're handling this in a very competent manner, I would say. They're bringing in a lot of guys. The Hawks obviously have as much draft capital as I think anyone outside of Phoenix in this class. Might be able to say Philadelphia, but I'd probably rather have 3 and 19 instead of the six picks Philadelphia has. They're just doing their homework. They're doing their due diligence in a very smart way. And kudos to them. I think that it's great. And you look at the number three overall pick, they can go in a variety of different ways. If Luka Doncic is on the board, that would be my pick. Luka is, for me, the number two prospect in the class, and he is a player that is in tier one for me. He's one of only two of them, along with DeAndre Ayton. So I consider him to be just like a slight level ahead of even the number three overall pick. So I mean, that's the route I would go. I've heard they've been high on Marvin Bagley throughout the entire year. Jaren Jackson fits a lot of what I can imagine Travis Schlenk wants to do from a modern basketball perspective. And they're not really, from what I can tell, getting involved in the Michael Porter sweepstakes. So all around, very competent stuff.
Yeah, I would definitely endorse not getting involved in the Michael Porter sweepstakes. That's just my opinion, but I would probably shy away from that. Let's talk about Bagley a little bit. I think he's somehow become a little bit polarizing, weirdly, after sort of being somebody who I think was, there was a consensus sort of building, but now that people have had more of a chance to look at his defense especially, there are some concerns. I think you are higher on him than people, at least some people across the industry, but what do you see from him sort of in general as an evaluation? Are you worried about the defense? How do you feel about him as an overall prospect?
Yeah, I'm definitely worried about the defense. I mean, he can go into interviews and media sessions and workouts and say, hey, I think I'm a good defender, like until he's blue in the face, but it's just not true at this stage. Like, he wasn't the only reason that Duke went to his own this year. I mean, their wings were not great defensively. Wendell Carter is not a particularly mobile defender, but he was a part. Like, let's be clear on this. Like, his lack of awareness off the ball, his lack of defensive fundamentals, real reason why they would have to go to his own this year and why they were a lot more successful in his own defense this year. Having said that, like, to me, there's just something to not overthinking the NBA draft. Marvin Bagley last year was 18 years old throughout basically the entire college season. I think he might have turned 19 in March, like mid-March or something. He averaged 21 points and 11 rebounds on 61% shooting from the field, hit almost 40% from three. He can pass the ball. He is maybe the most athletic player in this draft class in terms of body control, explosiveness, quick twitch, the way he utilizes his motor on the floor in conjunction with his athleticism. There's just so many different things to like about his game. I just personally wouldn't overthink it with him. Like, as long as you trust your defensive staff to coach him up, and if I was Atlanta with Lloyd Pierce coming in, who has among the best defensive reputations in the entire NBA, I would just not feel particularly worried about it. I would, if both Luka Doncic and DeAndre Ayton were off the board, I'd just take Marvin Bagley.
I can see the rationale behind that. I mean, especially as you mentioned, you know, Pierce having that reputation and just being able to handle defensive aspects. And I think Bagley has the tools. Like, there are some, I guess, concerns about his rim protection, ideally because of his wingspan. I don't think he reacted terribly well to a wingspan question that he got in Atlanta the other day after a workout. I think he's a little touchy on it, honestly, but it's one of those things where he's certainly capable of being a good switch defender, if nothing else. I mean, I'm sort of been torn between Jackson and Bagley for a while. I go back and forth, and I can see the upside in both guys. But there is definitely a mounting, I would say, Hawks fan contingent that wants Bagley because they want this offensive focal point kind of guy. And I can't really argue against that because this is a franchise that, as you well know, has not been always blessed with those kind of number one primary offensive options. And he probably can be that, it seems like, you think.
I mean, look, here's the deal. I think he can be a number one option on like a middle of the road team, sure, something along those lines. I mean, you look back through history, and this is something that I kind of realized on my podcast. How many real number one options have there been on NBA title teams, right?
Like, not that many.
Maybe like 15 or 20 throughout, yeah, history. So if you get a guy, like if you're basing the number one, number two, number three overall pick around getting a guy that is going to be like the guy who takes you to the NBA title, you're probably setting yourself up for failure in terms of your expectation level. If you take a guy like Marvin Bagley at number three, who I think compares very nicely to a guy like an Amari Stoudemire. There are aspects of Chris Bosh there, I think. There are aspects of Blake Griffin there. He doesn't compare just to like one particular player. But you're talking about like, I think, an all-NBA style player and a guy who can really help bring you to a level of competence and be a guy who can get you 20 points, 11 rebounds, hopefully knock down some threes, attack closeouts in a really competent manner. He has, like I said, like his body control is unbelievable for a guy his size. He just moves like a player that is 3 inches shorter than what he is. Just a very, very impressive prospect that I think is going to, like I said, NBA All-Star and be everything that you're hoping for from a draft prospect.
Absolutely. You know, Travis Schlenk's been asked a few times about, you know, fit concerns or I guess that kind of just overall mindset of what they want to do in this class. He's been very, very on message with saying they're just going to take the best player available. I am with that 100%. With that said, a lot of people ask me, you know, about the big guys, especially in their potential fit with John Collins. I've heard you talk about John Collins. I think everybody likes John Collins, but in the same breath, no one's really sure what his actual role slash upside is going to be. How much does that play into it, if at all? Because I think especially with Bagley, it'd be sort of a weird fit with Bagley and Collins. But at the end of the day, you know, Schlenk said it's going to be best player available, and I kind of agree with that.
In the Hawks situation, yes, I agree with it. He should just be taking the best player available in all realms. Because you look at what this Hawks roster has on it. Like, I really, really like John Collins. I think he's a very fun, interesting prospect who can be a rotation piece, who can be a, you know, maybe a sometime starter down the road. But, I mean, beyond him, beyond Taurean Prince, kind of.
That's about like, it. It's those two guys.
Yeah, like, I like Taurean Prince, but again, probably more of like a fringy starter, I think, more than a long-term, like, incredible piece going forward. So I'd just be taking the best guy that you think can be a centerpiece for your organization, especially offensively, because I trust that Lloyd Pierce is going to have a good defensive scheme. I just do at this stage. So I would be taking the best offensive player who I think can develop into a non-liability defensively if I was Atlanta. And just kind of going about it that way, because I think that in Atlanta's case, there's just not enough on the roster to really worry about, you know, the way X fits with Y.
I think Schlenk knows that and just can't say it's that specifically, but I think he's kind of saying that without saying that. So yeah. I'm with you 100%. Before we move off this top pick, I want to ask you about two more guys. You know, we talked about Jackson a little bit. He's the other guy who seems to be in contention if Luka is off the board. And I talked to Michael Cunningham of the AJC, who's plugged in pretty well here, thinks the Hawks might seriously consider taking Jackson at three. That wouldn't surprise anybody. Would that be a reasonable pick for you? I know you have Bagley higher, but would that be something that would be crazy, or is that a reasonable thing for you?
Totally reasonable. Absolutely 100% reasonable. Jaren Jackson's an unbelievable prospect. He could be the centerpiece for what Lloyd Pierce wants to build defensively, as a legit 1-5 switch guy who is also an elite level rim protector. He has among first round draft pick centers over the course of the last 15 years, the best block rate among those players. Again, so athletic, very good flexibility in terms of the way he gets down into a defensive stance, great motor on that end, great instincts on that end. The offensive game is a lot more hit or miss for me than I think what it is for other people. He got put into a lot of advantageous situations this year by being Michigan State's number five option. Obviously, as a number five option, you're not always going to get the opportunities that other players like Marvin Bagley get. But I'm also not sure that he earned like a lot more opportunities. Like, Michigan State certainly should have been giving him the ball more than what they did. But I don't know that I can say that he was such a standout when he got the ball that he was someone that they should have trusted more. And that stuff is concerning from being an offensive focal point standpoint. He'll be a good player. He'll knock down threes. He will grab some offensive rebounds whenever he's not spacing the floor. He'll be a competent finisher inside. I'm a little bit worried about some of the body control stuff with him on the interior whenever he goes to finish. But he's going to be a good player. He's going to be a very, very valuable player. But to me, he profiles more as like an excellent rotation player who, or an excellent role player who, and I don't mean that as a slight to him. I mean it as a, this guy is going to be one of the best role players in the league, like maybe make an all NBA team as a role player, because what his skill set is so valuable and so translatable in the modern NBA.
Yeah, I can totally see that as a reasonable outcome. And I think defensively, I mean, there's, I absolutely hate that people do this, but a lot of Hawks fans go to the old defense is all about effort stuff, which is always drives me crazy.
No,
because you have to
not
have
accurate
skills. You have to have skill, and he has a ton of it. But offensively, there are reasons to be, I don't know if concern is the right word, but at least skeptical of his upside offensively. I think that's kind of the way I'd put it. What do you make of his jump shot? I know it's ugly, but he's kind of made it at every level, so I'm not necessarily all that worried about it. And I think if you're a Hawks fan, you remember the fact that Al Horford's jump shot is not a pretty sight, but he kind of always makes it, so you're reminded of that kind of thing. I know it's not a linear comparison there, but in the same breath, like, it doesn't necessarily scare me to death.
Yeah, it's a set shot. I don't think he's ever, unless he totally revamps his mechanics, I don't think he's ever really going to shoot it off the dribble and be a guy that like is going to break down a defender on the perimeter and in a late shot clock situation get a good efficient look. But at the same time, he gets a great cross section of the basket because his arc under his jump shot is so great and he has great touch. I think it's going to be fine. I think he's probably going to be like a 38-40% three-point shooter in the NBA. It's just not going to be as versatile as some of the other players' jump shots that you'll see around. It's all going to be catch-and-shoot, spot-up stuff.
Absolutely. We can move on from there, but one more guy that I have to ask you about, because there's a lot of Trae Young buzz in the world the last week or so with the Hawks. I've not found anybody that will tell me that they're going to take him at three, but there is some interest there for sure, it seems like, especially if they elect to move down, and there's rumors of that. And everybody's kind of catching on to that after it's been reported a few times locally here that that's somebody the Hawks are at least considering. What do you make of Trae Young overall? I've read you, but not everybody has, so I kind of know what you're going to say here. But what do you make of Trae Young, upside, downside, reasonable projection, kind of all over the place, I know, but it's a tough one to evaluate for sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I knew what Trae Young was going to be in the NBA, no, I would probably be an NBA general manager right now. Like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, am I allowed to swear on this podcast? I don't even know.
Sure, Sam, just do whatever you want to do, honestly. It's your podcast.
Like, I'm not going to sit here and bullshit you guys. Like, I don't know what is going to happen with Trae Young. I can tell you that I trust just about everything in his offensive tool set. I think he's going to be fine getting separation. He has a great change of pace, great change of direction handle, great shoulder feint stuff that he's able to kind of get the defense off balance with. The jump shot, the threat of the jump shot in pull-up settings always has the defense off balance to begin with anyway. He's a very, very good jump shooter despite the 36% three-point shooting from this year, because so many of them come from behind the three-point arc and so many of them come in pull-up situations. And to be honest, I think his best skill is his passing ability. He is an unbelievable playmaker, especially in the open floor, but he's also a pretty good playmaker in the half court. The problem is that I genuinely believe he's going to enter the NBA as one of the three or four worst defenders in the NBA. And the coach that selects him is going to have to be willing to go through those growing pains and is going to have to be willing to put up with him getting headhunted constantly, because he's 6'1.5" with a 6'3" wingspan. He's not hyper quick twitch athletically. And to be honest, this year at Oklahoma didn't really give a whole lot of effort. So it's going to take time with him on that end, and he's going to give up points on that end. He just has to work with a coach that is willing to put up with that. And I hope that the coach has enough confidence in him. And I hope that Trey doesn't lose confidence in himself as he gets taken advantage of defensively. He needs to keep a positive mindset about it.
Yeah, he seems to be the kind of guy who will be able to do that, but it's going to be rough early on defensively. I think that's like the one thing everybody agrees on, is that it's going to be ugly defensively early on, and you know, can kind of have degrees on the other end of the floor. I think there are people who rightly believe he could be this elite option offensively, and there are people that are more skeptical. Comparisons are really tough. Obviously, the Steph Curry one is bothersome to me, but alas, I think,
Here's the thing. I got asked about that last night on the radio, and it was in the Bay Area. So I totally understood why they asked it. And to be honest, I'll just kind of say this, like, where he is right now is ahead of where Stephen Curry was when Stephen Curry was 19. What makes Stephen Curry so unique and so ridiculous is that Stephen Curry was an absolute outlier in terms of the way he developed from the time he was like 23 to 24 and then like from 26 to 27, or like the jump that he took from the pre-MVP year to the MVP year, because that stuff is not normal. That stuff does not happen to everyone. Now, the key is that maybe Trae Young will do that, but I don't think you can expect him to do that. Maybe he can be what Stephen Curry was in his rookie year of the NBA, which was a really good rookie year. It was just interrupted by ankle injuries. But the leaps beyond that, I think, are something that you can't really expect.
Totally agree. I think his offensive profile is very interesting, and I can see why people like him so much, because you know, guys that just shoot off the dribble like that and pass the way he does, they're not just out there and available. But there is still risk, and I think mitigating that is always the hard part about this. I wouldn't take him at three. If the Hawks trade down, then sure, but in the same breath, yeah. you can't like, there's been this notion that the Hawks will just trade back and, you know, automatically select Trae Young or be allowed to select Trae Young. It's like, well, if they love the guy, they got to take him at three. I wouldn't recommend that, but you can't just assume the guy's gonna still be there. That's not how that works.
Yeah, no, 100% agreed.
All right, let's move off of the third pick and get a little deeper here. Obviously, the Hawks have 19, 30, and 34 as well. 19 is really tough to gauge for me, just because, you know, Travis Schlenk even said this on the record the other day. Like, they don't know who's going to be there at 19. It's such a weird draft in that there's a lot of guys maybe not the same tier, but at least the same couple of tiers after you get out of the lottery, or maybe even higher than the lottery. If I asked you what the best case scenario is at 19, like maybe somebody falls or someone that you just love in that range, what would be the best case scenario for the Hawks at 19, in your opinion?
Best case scenario would be maybe Troy Brown falling.
I love Troy Brown.
Yeah, maybe Zaire Smith falling. I would be surprised if Zaire got there.
Agreed.
But I would be surprised if Troy got there too, to be honest. But we're talking like best case scenarios that have a non-zero chance of happening.
Right.
Among the more realistic guys, I don't think they'll take Melvin Frazier at 19, but he's the guy that like I have on my board next. I'm a huge Melvin Frazier fan. I think he is going to immediately step in and be a difference maker defensively, and you can continue to work with him on the jump shot and he'll be effective there. Kevin Huerter, I think, would make sense for them. He's, 6'7", can really shoot it on the move, can really run down off of pin downs, off of flares, really, really versatile offensive prospect who I think will probably have some defensive issues in the NBA. Chandler Hutchison is a really good prospect as well. Eliakobo, I think, would make sense if they want to try and look for the point guard position after not getting a chance at Trae Young. He's the next point guard I have on my board. So I agree with what Travis Schlenk said. There are a lot of guys that are very, very bunched up in that range. Like, you give me guys from like 18 on through, I mean, realistically, like 34 even, I would say. And there's not a whole lot of difference there. Like, if you told me the Hawks took Grayson Allen, who I have at 34 on my board, at 19, I wouldn't hate that pick. Like, I wouldn't sit here and like crush it in the way that you normally would crush a team reaching for the 34th best prospect at 19. These guys are just so bunched up, they're so tight, that I don't really begrudge anyone who has a pretty big, like, or a pretty different range of outcomes to where I do on my board.
Yeah, I feel better now hearing you say that as someone I trust, because that's kind of the feeling I've had the whole time. I think it's possible to reach a little bit, but like, if I like a guy in this class, I'm not going to kill him for taking him at 19. That's kind of how I am at this point in time. Actually, it's kind of funny. A couple guys that you named there, I was specifically had written down to ask you about. One of them is Melvin Frazier, who I really like. I don't think he's necessarily going to be there at 30. If he was, I would take him immediately, frankly.
Might be there.
He might be there, and that would be somebody, 3-and-D type, but, like, does he have upside beyond that? I guess the jump shot's sort of the pivot point for him, maybe.
Yeah, the question that I keep, like, kind of posing to NBA scouts and executives that I talk to is that, yeah, like, you would take Mikal Bridges ahead of him. I would take Mikal Bridges ahead of him. But what are the chances that Melvin Frazier becomes a better player than Mikal Bridges? I think they're like 30-35%. Like, Mikal Bridges is a safer prospect. He's going to shoot. You know that immediately. But I think Melvin Frazier is a better defensive prospect than what Mikal Bridges is. He's just so quick twitch, so long, plays with such energy and motor.
He's a better athlete too, isn't he? I think he is.
Much, much better athlete. Like, Frazier is one of the elite athletes in this class. So, like, look, Mikal Bridges is a very good prospect for today's 3-and-D game. He's going to come in with a tailor-made skill set, and he's a higher basketball IQ than what Melvin Frazier does right now from playing in a really smart, steady Villanova scheme. But you tell me that Melvin Frazier is on like the come up right now and is continuing to rise and continuing to just develop his game and continue to get better and better and better, and at some point he passes Mikal Bridges, would not be shocked at all. He is that athletic and has that kind of upside, in my opinion.
I am a big fan of his as well. You mentioned Kevin Huerter in passing. There was a little bit of buzz that he has the promise and it could be the Hawks as the team. I haven't been able to nail that down necessarily, but wouldn't surprise me if they had real interest there. I will say the Klay Thompson comparison requires the leap of epic proportions on defense, because yeah. I don't see him becoming that kind of defender. But in this modern game, like, is he the best sort of shooter type available in that range? He probably is, right?
In that range, yeah, I think so. I like Jerome Robinson a lot as a shooter. I like Grayson a lot as a shooter. I think he's going to be a very, very good spot-up threat who can also attack closeouts. But Herter's shot is a little bit easier. It's just a little bit more fluid, comes out of his hand better. To me, yeah, the Klay Thompson comparison is insane because of the defense. Yes. Like, Kevin Huerter can't defend at all. Klay Thompson, though, on the other hand, immediately stepped in and was able to be a two-way player. Now, if you told me that Kevin Huerter at some point averages like 18, 19 points a game and does it while making 3 three-pointers a game, okay, I buy that. And that's a very valuable pick at number 19. In terms of the promise stuff, I mean, the dude now has a promise from Atlanta. He has a promise from Utah. He has a promise right. from the Lakers. I mean, half these teams don't even give out promises. More than half of them. I would say like 80% of teams in the NBA don't give out promises. Like,
and now he's gonna go in the first round anyway now, so like it doesn't really matter. Like, I guess like 2 months ago when it was like you know, he was seen as sort of a fringe-ish first round, maybe even a high second round prospect. Maybe it mattered more. But right now, like, wouldn't you be shocked if he didn't go in the top 25?
Yeah, I would be surprised if he did not go in the top 25. I'm sure that, like, enough teams gave him, like, not like a promise, but gave him assurances, hey, we really like you. You'll be very high on our board whenever we pick. And, you know, from what I was told going into the decision process for him, he was someone that wanted to be like not just a like, you know, number 29, number 30 overall pick in the first round. He wanted to like be sure that he was going to go in the first round. So I get the impression that there are enough teams that are pretty high on him that will consider taking him. And I think that really like that range probably starts like number 16 with Phoenix all the way down to like number 25 with the Lakers.
That makes complete sense. And of course the Hawks are in the middle of that range. So somebody to keep an eye on. You mentioned Jerome Robinson in passing. I am guilty of probably talking about him the least of anybody in this entire range. I think he's just sort of a guy who's just out there floating around that isn't getting a lot of attention. Part of that's because he played at BC, but tell people what they can expect from him, because I don't think I've done a great job at breaking him down, and he's just, you know, I guess just a guy that's like kind of slipping through the cracks right now.
Yeah, he's just a guy who can get a bucket, like, anytime on the floor. He is a guy who has great change of pace dribbled, great change of direction dribble. He plays with an excellent tempo. Was a lot better at Boston College the last 2 years whenever he was moved a little bit more off ball next to Kai Bowman, who is another like pretty real NBA draft prospect in his own right, coming out of Boston College next year. Robinson is a guy who shot like 50, 42, I think like 86 or something like that. Great shooter, can really, really just kind of get buckets. Now, the problem is that he's not going to be a good defender at the next level. He's 6'6", I think, but he doesn't play with that kind of height. He plays more like he's like 6'3", 6'4", maybe. So you're still going to be able to take advantage of him defensively, I think. But if he can provide enough offensive value to where he overcomes that defensive hurdle, and I think he can, as like a secondary ball handler who can get his shot whenever he wants, be a proficient three-point shooter, I have no problem with the Hawks taking him at 30. I don't really think he should probably be in the mix at number 19, though. And I'm someone who I think I was like among the first people to say like this guy is a real like top 35 prospect.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I agree with you. I would be a little bit, you know, I would have my eyebrow raised if he went at 19. You know, I wouldn't necessarily kill it. If you like him, I get it. But I would be more interested in the 30 range if he is still there. There are a few point guards. We talked about, you know, Trae Young, obviously, earlier. You mentioned Elia Kobo. There's Aaron Holiday and Jalen Brunson. Point guard's a spot for the Hawks that isn't necessarily something they have to address because Dennis Schroeder is still on the roster for however long he remains on the roster. But I think they'd be looking at point guards at least tangentially in this class. Do you have a Kobo ahead of those guys, ahead of the next tier of Holiday, Brunson, and whoever else? And how would you sort of order those prospects?
I do. I have a Kobo slightly ahead. Yeah, I have a Kobo at number like 21 or so. I haven't like totally finalized my board yet, so don't like 100% hold me to these rankings. Sure. But like I have a Kobo at like number 21. I have Shake Milton like number 25. He's like kind of a combo-y. Yeah, kind of a combo-y point guard. I have Aaron Holiday at number 28. You know, definite first round pick. De'Anthony Melton at number 29 for me makes sense as a first round pick. Robinson at 30. You know, Bruce Brown, Grayson Allen, I think, can steal some minutes at the point. Then Javon Carter and Jalen Brunson and Landry Shamet, they're all like top 40 guys for me. So the Hawks are going to have a lot of options in that range. And, you know, if they can find a taker for Dennis Schroeder, this might be the year to even take two and just, you know, kind of develop them as you can.
Especially because they're not, I mean, a couple of those guys are pure point guards. I think Brunson's obviously a pure point guard, but a couple of guys that really aren't. They're kind of these combo guard types. Like Shake Milton's got a 7'1" wingspan. Like he's sort of a freakish role player hybrid type that I like quite a bit. But yeah, I think that wouldn't be the worst idea in the world. And again, like there's this notion in Hawks land that they have to take a point guard. I would not say that, but there are a bunch of them, at least guys who can fake it there in that range. So it would not surprise anybody if they came away with one in this class. I have to ask you about Mitchell Robinson because I get a ton of questions about him. Obviously, freakish upside, also freakish downside, I think. But what do you make of him right now? I know it's been sort of a weird draft process after a very weird year, but he's sort of tantalizing, especially because people really like upside with the Hawks, I found, because they're in this rebuilding process, and he certainly has upside.
Yeah, I mean, not a guy that's for me, I would say. Always been someone who has been discussed as being extremely immature. This goes back to being like when he was identified as a five-star prospect when he was a sophomore. So nothing about what I've learned about him has really changed that opinion. You can make a case that he would be one of the two or three best rim protectors in this class, probably the third best one behind Jaren Jackson and Bamba. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't really buy any of the jump shot stuff. I don't really buy any of the, skill stuff that he's been showing in workouts or whatever. Just not what he's shown in the past. And I think he can be a great rim runner, can be a great shot blocker, but gotta, you know, get the, really start working hard as he can at this. Otherwise, I would not really have him anywhere near my board.
Is he somebody that makes some more sense at like maybe 34, less risk in the second round, you know, non-guaranteed contract, that kind of stuff? Is that kind of where you would maybe start thinking about him? I think first round stuff is different because you just kind of have to guarantee a guy a couple years and it gets riskier there, right?
No, it's fine if they take him in the second round. Sure. I get why you would take a risk on a guy like that in the second round. I wouldn't want to guarantee him like 2.5 years, essentially. Like for the Hawks, they're probably going to be guaranteeing all of their first round picks 3 years, just yeah, given where they are in their rebuild. Not a guy that I would want to guarantee 3 years, but if you told me that they guaranteed him a year and a half at number 34, I'd say sure, do your thing. Give him a chance to develop and see what you guys can do.
Yep, that makes complete sense. And it's just sort of weird in this class because you have all the bigs at the top. You have, I guess, Big Bob Williams somewhere in the middle. And then you have this huge gulf of no bigs on people's boards between, like, what, 15 and, like, 35, 40, I guess. Is Mo Wagner your next big? Like, there's not really much – I mean, maybe Chimezie Metu, but there isn't much between, you know, 15 and, what, 40, somewhere in there?
Yeah, I mean, like, Mitchell Robinson's in there. But, I have Chimezie Metu as my next big. I think that the idea that some people have perpetuated about him being like a raw big man who still hasn't like developed his skill set is kind of insane, because like part of what makes him attractive as a prospect is the fact that he can handle the ball and shoot from like out to 20 feet. Otherwise, why are you taking Chimezie Metu? I have him next on my board. He's athletic. He can block shots. He has that offensive skill set that can play in a modern game. More of a backup kind of center to me, though. But you're right. Like, I have Mitchell Robinson at 33. I have Chimezie Metu at 36. I have Mo Wagner at 40. And then you even have to go to, like, number 48 to get to my next guy, which is Ray Spalding. So, like, it is a big man bereft draft class, I would say, once you get past the initial burst of really, really great big men. And that's fine. Given the way the NBA is going, I think it makes a lot of sense for it to be that way.
Yep, that totally makes sense. We're sort of wrapping up here, I guess, relatively soon. But the Hawks, of course, have these four picks. There are some people that would like the Hawks to stash one, potentially. Are there any candidates in that range? And also, I need to ask you about Musa, because he's, I guess, the only guy, aside from Okobo, that's European that might go in that 19-ish range, although I'm not necessarily as high on him. And by the way, how do you pronounce his first name? Because I don't really know.
Jonan.
Jonan. That would not have been what I did, so I'm glad I asked you.
Jonan Musa. Yeah, if you're taking him at 30, I think that it's a great pick, to be honest. He is one of the most prolific scorers in Europe for his age, and has been basically throughout his entire development process. Really, really good shooter, underrated vision, can handle the ball a little bit at 6'9". I have no idea who he's going to defend. I have absolutely zero idea who he defends at the next level. But as a guy that can be a bench scorer, why not? Just take a shot at number 30. It's not like you're getting like a crazy amount of value there anyway, in typical drafts at least. So if that's where they pick to stash a guy, and honestly, I don't know that they have to stash, just given how bereft their roster is right now.
Yes.
Like, seriously, how many guys do they have on their roster right now? They have Schroeder, Prince, Bazemore. They gave Damian Lee real money, right?
They did not, actually. He's actually not even guaranteed to come back. He's the one that he I guess he turned down, essentially. That's been reported. He turned down the multi-year sort of non-guaranteed deal, trying to hit the market, which was a choice that he made. But yeah, they have Jalen Morris and Antonius Cleveland, and it's that kind of crew. But yeah, aside from the guy, I mean, there's probably, you know, eight guys on the roster that are like definitely going to be on the roster. And after that, it gets, there's some non-guaranteed contract guys, but there's plenty of space for four rookies, I will say.
Yeah. And then there's like Collins, Bembry, and I think Tyler Dorsey has guaranteed money.
He does. And Isaiah Taylor will probably be around, even though he's non-guaranteed. I think he's going to be on the roster unless they just need the roster spot. But yeah, it gets pretty ugly in a hurry there.
So yeah, no, I mean, it's not even that it gets ugly. It's just a team in the middle of a rebuild, you know? So if the top guy on your board at every spot is a college kid, I don't think they should feel that worried about taking college kids, I guess. So, having said that, if they do decide to stash, Musa does want to come over immediately.
Yeah, I read that or saw that somewhere.
So yeah, wouldn't really necessarily be a stash. The best player on my board who might be open to not coming over immediately, because I do believe Okobo also wants to come over immediately, is Rodion Kirks, who is a kid from plays for Barcelona on their B team and hasn't really gotten a lot of chances yet to prove himself on like the ACB level, because he's been very focused on the NBA for a while and Barcelona has kind of messed with his minutes a little bit and not really given him the senior team chances that his talent might necessitate him getting. So that's probably the best guy. And if they took him at 34 and wanted to stash him, I think that would make sense.
Yep, I agree. Outside of Frazier, who we talked about a lot, is there a wing that you like more than the other guys, maybe in the 30-34 range? I mean, I guess, you know, I'm assuming Jacob Evans is probably going to be gone, but I guess he could be there. You have Josh Okogie. You have other, I mean, there's other guys in that range. I guess maybe Khyri Thomas is kind of a wing, even though he's not necessarily wing height. Trent Jr. is around. Like, is there a guy in that sort of range that you like more than the others?
Yeah, I mean, I would rank them, assuming that Chandler Hutchison is gone, which it seems like, you know, for all intents and purposes, he probably will be. Yeah. You know, Jacob Evans would probably be number one just among the guys that could be there realistically. Dante DiVincenzo would be up there for me. I like Dante a good amount. Shake Milton is a guy that you could theoretically see as a wing, just given the 6'6" with a 7'1" wingspan stuff. Josh Okogie would be there. De'Anthony Melton would be there. Khyri Thomas. Bruce Brown's like 6'5" with a 6'10" wingspan. So if you think that you can get him to shoot, then realistically he can be a wing.
I like Bruce Brown a lot. He had a nightmare year in Miami, but like before that, was he, I mean, people were thinking about him as like a what, top 20-ish guy coming into the year?
Yeah, no, I had him as like a number 12 coming into the year. He's a super, super mature kid, super smart kid, very, very hard worker. All of those attributes apply to Bruce Brown, including him being an awesome athlete as well. So you can trust him defensively. He's a good ball handler. You can trust him as a pick and roll decision maker and playmaker. The swing skills, the shot. If he can shoot, he's going to be in the NBA for a long time. If he can't shoot, things get pretty dicey pretty quick.
I wanted to ask you about a couple more guys who are more well known that I'm a little bit wary of. Gary Trent Jr. and Hamidou Diallo, who is not good at basketball in my opinion.
Well, Trent is, I have both of those guys like mid 40s.
Trent can shoot it. Like, there's no question about that. But it's.
Yeah.
It's kind of what else? What else does he do?
Yeah. Like, it all comes down to philosophy with like Trent versus Diallo. Because do you think neither of them are NBA players right now? I think we can agree with that. Yep. But like, it all comes down to, would you rather develop a guy who can really, really shoot it in an exceedingly high level? Because Trent is probably one of the five or six best shooters in this class. Can you develop the rest of his skill set whenever he doesn't have a whole lot of athleticism and doesn't have a whole lot of ability to separate? Or would you rather kind of develop a guy in Hamidou Diallo who has every single athletic and physical trait in the book that you're looking for, but kind of doesn't really know how to play basketball in a team construct yet, and, you know, was inconsistent defensively and doesn't really make any sort of impact at all. But if you can get him to shoot, he's if a team figures out how to get Hamdou Diallo to shoot, more power to you. Yeah, God love you.
Congratulations.
But like, I don't see it happening. I mean, but if he does, he's like a starter, I think.
I've said, maybe you, I'm not sure you agree with me, but I think he's the worst basketball player of anybody in the top like 45 in this class right now, today.
That's a good question. Who do I think the worst?
I mean, I get all the upside,
Simons,
but
is not far off.
Sure, I can see that.
And I don't mean to trash these dudes. Like, they're great basketball players.
Yeah, it's just prospect. I mean, it goes with every caveat. We want guys to succeed. It has to be said. But just evaluate.
No, I mean, I want all of these dudes to have, like, the most successful career they possibly can. But, like, yeah, I mean, like, Hamdou Diallo did not show much this year.
I mean, if you just watched him in college, and you would not see him as a top 40 pick. It would just would not be a thing that you did.
Yeah.
Okay, I promise we'll get off that. Two more guys, I'll let you get out of here. One is Landry Shamet, who I've always liked, but seems to be sort of maybe in the range below the Hawks, maybe on a lot of people's boards. And then I have to ask you about Mo Wagner, because he's Mo Wagner, and that's my guy.
I mean, athletic concerns on both fronts there, I would say. Both very, very good shooters for their position, but the key is rounding out their skill set with enough other tools to where they can be valuable. I look at Landry Shamet and really wonder who he defends at the next level. I wonder if he can be a lead ball handler, and is he just a shooter, basically? And even the jump shot, like, the jump shot went in at an elite, elite clip, but that is a flat jump shot. Like, does that extend out to NBA three-point range at the level he needs it to? Mo Wagner is someone I'm slightly higher on. I like the fact that he plays incredibly hard, that he's a great teammate that I think guys will rally around. I don't think he defends really anyone at the next level. It's going to be really, really hard for him to figure out a way to do that. So I think they would be reasonable picks at number 34, just because you're taking flawed prospects every single time at number 34. But there are probably going to be guys that would be higher on my board.
I agree on almost, I think, all of that, honestly. I do think it's Mo Wagner's defense is something that I think about at night sometimes. No, I love Mo.
You know what? Hey, he deserves a lot of credit, because
he was way better this year. Way
worked
better.
Really hard. He is, yeah, like, he got a lot better this year. And he also started to rebound at a relatively elite clip as well. So, like, he did a really good job of trying to improve the weaknesses in the way that he could, but they just aren't kind of there yet.
Yep, that makes total sense. One quick one. I promise this is going to be it. If the Hawks were to try to package and move up from 19 into that sort of mid, like, you know, late lottery 15-ish range, is there one guy that you think they should be targeting if they were willing and able to do that? That's always a popular scenario from Hawks fans. Like, hey, we have all these picks, let's move up and take X prospect. I'm like, well, it's never that easy, number one. And number two, will that guy be there? I don't know.
I'll say this first. Like, if I was the Hawks and I have as many holes on my roster as the Hawks do,
yep,
I would rather have all of the bites at the apple that I could get, as opposed to, like, you know, packaging and moving up for a singular prospect that I really like. Because, you know, like, I'm someone who thinks that you can be good at the NBA draft and can, like, evaluate prospects better than other people marginally. I'm not saying I do that, but I think there are teams that do it. I would rather get multiple bites at that apple than try and evaluate once, just because even if you are really good at this, you're putting your eggs in one basket, and that is a marginally more difficult situation to put yourself in. Having said that, I have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as like a top 10 guy in this class, and he's someone that I think could fall to like 14, 15 realistically. Miles Bridges, I don't think he gets down to like the 13, 14 range, but it's not impossible, I would say. I mean, Kevin Knox, I don't think it's that far. Like, it's a weird draft, because from like number 6 to number 13, there are a lot of really, really close guys. But I do think that, you know, Atlanta would be better kind of sticking pat and taking the guys that are on their board.
You and I are on the same page there, to be sure. And, you know, something I've been saying over and over again, to people when they ask me, you know, how important this draft is and how important, especially the number three pick is. And it's like the whole reason to rebuild and get all these assets is to have multiple bites. So, I mean, obviously you want to nail number three pick, and I would never say otherwise. But as we've seen in Philly, you can miss that high when you have a ton of other assets and picks, which is what Travis, and Schlenks even said this on the record, like it's all about taking multiple swings because the NBA draft is hard. Like, I think you are great at this, and I think there are people that are great at this, but nobody's perfect at this. Like, not even the guys who, you know, the Spurs always get all the love. They miss all the time. Like, guys, you know, people miss in the draft. It's what happens.
Yeah, like Boston has, you know, one of the best scouting departments in the league.
And they miss all the time.
Opinion.
It is what it is.
And like, yeah, like, you know, they've done a great job recently, and their results have spoken for itself, but you know, 3 years ago or 2 years ago or whatever, they took like Demetrius Jackson, Ben Bentle. Like, they missed on like 7 second-round picks.
Atlanta's own RJ Hunter.
Yeah. So like, it's just really hard and really, really difficult to get everything right. Like, I think that's one of the best scouting staffs in the league, and they still miss regularly.
Yeah. I mean, if you hit on 2 of the 4 picks, you're doing a good job in this draft.
You really are. You absolutely are. Not everything is going to be the Warriors draft where they ended up with Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Festus Ezeli.
Oh, shouts to Festus Ezeli, who I've not thought about in a while. So that's probably a good place to end. All right, Sam, I've kept you too long, man. Please plug anything that you would like. I know people want to subscribe to The Athletic for sure, but they should be following you already, but if they're not, tell them where they can.
I'm mostly just here to plug Festus Ezeli.
I love that.
Go to The Athletic, subscribe to The Athletic. A lot of really great draft content up there. I will be doing, you know, mock draft, you know, throughout the course of next week. I'll have a top 100 rating come out. I'm going to try and also do some stuff on Jaren Jackson, Mohamed Bamba, and maybe even Trae Young before the little run through ends here on Thursday. Also, I'll do some free agency stuff over there. So go to The Athletic, keep that stuff all over there. Subscribe, please. And yeah, I'd say go to the Game Theory podcast on iTunes. Just released a project with Cole Zwicker where we went through for basically 3.5 hours over the course of 2 podcasts, breaking down the top 17 players on my board. So Cole and I have very different opinions on prospects typically, but it gives a good chance for some debate and some discussion about the upsides and downsides of these players. So if you want to get a real full evaluation, that's a good place to start.
I do not think you'll find a better podcast if you are an NBA draft enthusiast than you and Cole, especially over at the Game Theory. So check those guys out for sure. Thank you, Sam. I really appreciate it, man. We'll have to do it again under less stressful circumstances, maybe in the off season or like when the NBA is actually just regular. We could talk about, you know, Isaiah Taylor for a while.
Isaiah Taylor, man, I was not a fan of him coming into the NBA. You know, I'm glad that he's made it because he made a pretty tough decision leaving Texas when he did.
I was with you all the way, and I think he's an NBA player. Maybe not a great one, but I think he's going to be around for a while. So congrats to Isaiah Taylor. And thanks again, Sam. Really appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Brad.
As for everybody else, please subscribe to the podcast, and we'll see you guys in a couple days.